Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Thanks to Laura Fox. It's Monday the 7th of March and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Niall Moran will join us to look back on the latest round of the Allianz Hurling League.
Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly will reflect on the Premier League action with us.
And Laura Ward will take a call to reflect on Sarsfield's win over Out at the Bala in yesterday's Senior Camogie Club Final.
If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Ruby, you're back.
I am. I was never away. Just because I'm sitting across the studio from you doesn't mean I'm back.
Oh, it feels like you're back, though. It feels like you're back. You're coming in, you're slagging me, you're slagging Alan Cawley, you're slagging Laura Fox. It's like you haven't talked to anybody in 2 years and you're just taking aim.
Yeah, and the price of diesel is killing me, so I won't come back for a while.
Well, the good news is we have a competition. And it is thanks to Yoplait Ireland, the new official yogurt of the LGFA and proud sponsors of their higher education competition, which final takes place this week on the 8th, 11th and 12th of March. To celebrate their sponsorship, they've given us an amazing €1,000 sports voucher to give away at the end of the week to one lucky club to buy lots of cool kit and equipment. Plus, you could win yourself our daily prize of a €100 sports voucher and a delicious hamper full of everyone's Yoplait favourites.
So, to be given a chance to win, all you have to do is answer the following question, which was written for Alan Cawley because he's a big Yoplait fan, so he could get it right. Which boxer is due to take on Amanda Serrano in New York next month?
That's an easy one, all right. Text your answer, your name and the name of your club to 51552. And as always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details.
Indeed. So, Marie, we will keep going. We'll get to Roy Keane and the soccer in a minute with Alan Cawley, because last week I know our listeners were a tad offended that we had skipped over the hurling, but Niall Moran was busy last week, but we do have him this week.
You knew I wasn't here, that was it. I wasn't here, so you skipped over the hurling. If I was here, that wouldn't have happened.
Actually, you know what? No, I'm actually going to get Niall Moran to officially come on here and tell you that and defend us that we didn't skip over your beloved hurling. We didn't want to leave Niall Moran out, and he was managing last weekend. Schools were playing a match at 8:30 tonight. Can you imagine that GAA? Like, they're just so unthoughtful. School kids play at 8:30 in the Monday night.
Is that the truth, Niall? Were you unavailable last week?
I'm sure there's a union issue about to arise. Ruby, you're in super form. You know, Cheltenham is around the corner there.
I'm telling you, Niall.
Are you glorifying in Kildare's success last week? So,
bit of both.
You in good form for once.
I'm telling you, it makes a change. When you're probably a bit more bubbly yourself this week, Limerick did manage a draw against Clare, which put me in good form. I didn't have to listen to Marie.
Look, it was a brilliant contest. It was a great atmosphere out in Clare yesterday, to be honest. Probably Clare a few disappointed that they didn't win the game. Came with a huge performance, probably left some chances behind them near the end, and I think they'll take huge encouragement from that. And I suppose over the last 6 weeks since they last played, I think they really resolved their puck out issues, and tactically they seem to be a lot smarter. And in the same right, look, Limerick were much improved as well. There was a lot more hunger, a lot more fight. And look, as you probably well know, Ruby, like, sometimes the harder you try, the harder it gets. And it kind of sometimes during the game, it kind of seemed like that the harder Limerick were trying, it just kind of the whole started getting a little bit bigger. They were dropping balls, making errors. But I think both managers were very pleased after it.
It's interesting to even hear Ruby say that Limerick managed to get a draw against Clare, because for the last number of years, any time you're going to have to play Limerick, it's usually the other way around, that you're thinking that Clare would manage to earn a draw against Limerick, or whoever they're playing would manage to earn a draw against Limerick. And it feels, even though they're not at their best, Niall, they still haven't lost that aura about them. You know, they still have an awful lot for people to fear, because you sense that Kinnaird is going to sort out whatever problems they have, that they're going to be able to click into gear, and that the time will come. But we're in March now and Championship is around the corner.
Yeah, Championship is around the corner. I'd say sometimes, Marie, for your listeners, I'd say it seemed that we're, maybe it's because I'm a Limerick man or whatever it is, that we're infatuated by Limerick and their performances. But I suppose the reality of it is, like, there's a lot of other very, very strong counties out there at the moment, and a lot of them have lifted their game. And do you know what I mean? If you can't match them, then you have to do something to get up to that pace. And I think what you're seeing is every time these teams are playing Limerick, they're coming gung ho. They're coming tactically a lot more astute. And look, for a team who are on the road 4 or 5 years, it's very hard to be going at it hammer and tongs every Sunday when a team are coming at you with everything that they have, and they're probably building that game up. So look, that'll probably filter itself out as Championship goes, given the nature of that every game will be a Championship match. But Yeah, look, the teams are catching up, and I suppose for Limerick, again, maybe the depth of the squad has been challenged, and like looking at it there yesterday, like only at times only for Dermot Burns on the half-back line, we just, do you know what I mean, we looked devoid of an energy. Even the body language of some of the lads, like, you know, when you compare it even maybe to Waterford below in Welsh Park, they abounded with energy, but it's like everything, and you can't keep on going to the well for every match every day of the week. And I think maybe in Limerick's case here, they seem to be looking that they have to get themselves primed for what will be a longer round robin championship, and I think we'll probably see the fruits of that in 6 weeks' time.
Now, maybe I look at two things too tactically, and I'm always looking at looking for something maybe that's not there, but is there a case to be made that maybe Limerick and John Kiely aren't showing their hand, that they're just going not so much through the motions, but definitely aren't experimenting too much?
Yeah, I suppose, look, I suppose that we would have said it in years gone by, if plan A wasn't working for Limerick, then they did plan A better. And I suppose like that comes with something that they've kind of fine-tuned over the last, probably since the start of 2017. And I suppose maybe what you're seeing are different to most sports, like the game evolves as every 3 or 4 years. And maybe that cycle of Limerick's play, maybe, so the evolution of that has probably come full circle, and we're now seeing teams get to that pitch, and I suppose it's a case of who gets the next step ahead. Will that be Limerick? Will that be another county? Do you know what I mean? The game, it seems that every team's starting to play the game the same way. They're giving up puckouts, and then the middle third is just becoming totally congested. So, like, and even looking at it in terms of the scores, like, I think scoring in a lot of the games this year, you can see it has dramatically dropped in comparison to last year across the board, not just in Limerick, across the board. And I suppose that's probably a sign that when you're mimicking what other teams are doing, like that becomes a stalemate.
Is there a chance Limerick are treading thin water with their discipline? 3 red cards now in 4 games. Could they possibly be marking themselves out to referees to be keeping an extra eye on them?
I think they are keeping an extra eye on them, to be fair. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of stuff going on off the ball there in terms of the lads being held, and look, I know Aaron got a book in there for a swipe on Conor Cleary, but you know, there was a lot going on before between the two of them, and it was probably the culmination of a lot of what went on. Those things balance themselves out as they go too, and again, any sportsman knows sometimes when a sense of frustration comes in, and maybe when you're a little bit of fatigued or you're off your game, so those little things creep into it. I suppose maybe that's what you're seeing. That's probably that's probably a culmination of a lot of what's going on with Limerick the last few weeks. But I suppose the thing of urgency for me will just be that energy. Like, without that level of energy, I don't think you're going to have execution of their game plan to the perfection that is needed. And I think when you're seeing other teams, like Clare did it very, very well yesterday. John Cork are doing it very well. So, look, there's a hell of a lot more teams in the country than Limerick, and at some point, I think we're going to get away from talking about them.
Are Waterford one of those teams, Niall, do you think? They did impress against Tipperary, and you mentioned that energy there and the importance of it, and they seem to display that in abundance.
Yeah, again, without doubt, like, even you look at yesterday there, like, you know, 128 is serious trimming, even in terms of scores. Like, Patrick Kern was out at 11, you know, superb hurler. Like, at this stage, it's hard to believe he hasn't kind of cemented his place given his pedigree as an underage hurler. He's out at 11 now, it represents a challenge. You've got Kitogue and Jack Prendergast, very, very good. And Waterford, the whole time, have just built their panel, and they're going big physical men that are very, very athletic, and they're well coached by Mikey Beavens, and obviously well managed by Liam Kyle and co. And I think when you look at their half-back line yesterday, like, you tied the Bork at 6, Jack Fagan, Earl Daly, and that's before we ever start talking about the likes of Callum Lyons or Jamie Barnes coming in the middle. I think they are a live threat. I think we're looking at the betting. I think the betting is all wrong for the All-Ireland. I wouldn't touch Limerick if I was a bookie at the moment, given the odds. Not saying that they won't end up as All-Ireland champions, but if I was having a punt, I'd definitely be looking further south to the likes of Waterford or Cork.
Now, this is a tiny bit off topic, but, you know, you're looking at panels and you're talking about how they're getting big physical men, and you know, if they can hurl, then that's nearly an added bonus at this stage. But when you're looking at schools and being a coach, is that the same trend that's there as well?
Yeah, obviously it mimics it, Marie. Like, do you know what I mean? I suppose these things feed down. Like, I suppose we consume a lot of television, and obviously teams are going to try and mimic a lot of what goes on. But I suppose, look, ultimately it still comes down to ability. And I suppose even at all levels, I suppose especially as you permeate down to 20s and 18s and obviously universities and colleges, it still comes down to guys who have the key skills and who can kind of perfect them to the best level. And ultimately, if you ask me for a player going out, a natural ability, I'd still take a guy who can win his own ball in the air, or a guy who's a fine striker left and right, the basic skills, because without those, the rest of it won't follow through. So look, I just think, even though the game has kind of become more tactical as such, I don't think we've ever seen players as skillful. And like, even some of the scores there, like obviously Tony Kelly there yesterday, Patrick Horgan, what he was doing, Stephen Bennett for Watford, like, I don't think we've ever seen that level of score. So even as the game becomes more tactically nuanced and whatever else, I think the skill levels have just gone through the roof, and I suppose nobody is afraid to try anything at this stage, which is brilliant for the spectator.
As the game gets more tactical, will you not need to have faster, clever guys to get ahead rather than bigger, stronger people?
I think what you've seen there, Ruby, one trend, you're talking about trends, like obviously I know the touchdowns on the game about giving up the puck out, and then once guys come to 45 maybe attacking, but I think one thing that I saw yesterday's game, a couple of games, was if the referee can blow the whistle a lot quicker on the restart, okay, I think what you're seeing then is it's not giving teams that chance to reorganise and reset, because ultimately, like, there's a reset time normally about maybe 4 to 6 or 7 seconds, okay, and so is the ball delivery time normally. Again, it's to be timed, but it's probably, you're talking about 3-4 seconds by the time the ball is delivered to an area far down the pitch. So if referees can keep that whistle blowing quickly, I think it allows the game to be a lot more fluid. I think it kind of negates a lot of this defensive structure, and I think ultimately if referees can go with that quicker whistle, I do think it will lead to a far better spectacle as the year goes and far more attacking hurling. And but again, look, the referees have a lot going on. By the time you mark in a score or whatever else, it does take time, and you know, if you're doing any officiating. But I think that was one of the trends that I've seen, some of the teams that are trying to break the kind of setup. The quicker you speed up play, it doesn't allow reset times, and that's probably something we'll see more of as the summer comes in.
Yeah, it's hard with hurling because so much happens within those 70 minutes. So when you look at the rest of them then, right, so Waterford obviously impressed. Tipperary, you do get the sense that they're in that transitional period and the Championship might bring things together a little bit more from them. Cork, Kilkenny, would they be the next two that would be happiest out of this league?
If we were talking last week, I don't think Kilkenny would have been in the discussion, but obviously Kilkenny do as Kilkenny does. They start to pick it up. I suppose, like, traditionally this hour of the year would be the equivalent of Easter time, and the evenings are getting a bit longer, and so what you do see is more experienced teams and more experienced managers that tend to get it right a lot easier come this time of year. And I think what you saw with Kilkenny was, like, they had a huge return from, say, last day, 219 out of 223. Like, that's phenomenal. But I suppose, look, what you saw was, like, Wally Walsh coming good, Pádraig Walsh coming good, like, John Donnelly. It's now their team. It's not TJ's team or Richie's team anymore. Yes, they're part of that team, but it's now, like, the Wallys and Pádraig Walsh and that. And I suppose they're saying, hey, we're getting between the eyes here week in, week out. They say that we're the last generation. Well, we'll come with something. But also, you have to remember, in the league, and with due respect to Dublin, I just don't think they performed. I think they came without an energy. I think they were just devoid of it. And that does happen with the league. There's often a day you go out and you're just flat. And I think for Dublin, so I mean, they went into a trap on Saturday night and they got well and truly exposed. But I still think Kilkenny may have a little bit to go, but Cork, on the other hand, excellent. And probably what you're seeing there, as of yesterday, you saw Hoggy and Harnley, the old brigade, they started to show a bit of form, because they're getting the smell of the fight now as well. So once you mix them in with the guys who've been so impressive in the earlier games, Cork really and Waterford, in my reckoning, they're the two most dangerous teams out of this league, whilst Wexford are obviously the surprise packets with another win there yesterday.
Massive win for Laois against Antrim as well, won by a point, down to 14 men after 24 minutes in. Look, they've gotten a few trimmings lately, Laois, from Kilkenny and Waterford, so it was great to get a victory over Antrim for them.
Yeah, and it's brilliant that we're actually talking about them, because, and again, that's not meant in a condescending tone. Like, that game yesterday, it's sad to see it played out in such a small crowd, but it was phenomenally intense. And like, you're talking about the forwards, like the Laois forwards there yesterday, like the Laois have six forwards who would make the place on any team, like, you know, Picky Maher, Paddy Purcell, Chad O'Wire, these guys, Ross King. These boys are phenomenal, and just the nature of the hurling, like I said, they're regarded in some departments as third world hurling, but it's not. And I think, look, Antrim will be really, really disappointing. We've spoken previously about they had super performances without getting the results, and ultimately the one big result they needed to get in the league was Laois. But again, Laois had this game teed up from a distance, and then Antrim, maybe the circumstances changed, the pressure was on them to perform, and look, they'll be very disappointed. There was 14 men Laois for 45 minutes, and do you know what I mean? They just couldn't beat them. And again, to be caught even coming down the home straight, that will gall Darren Gleeson. And look, they still have to go and beat Offaly, well, more than likely Offaly in a relegation playoff, which will still be no easy feat when the pressure is on.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thank you so much for joining us, Niall. We have a lot to get through before this show finishes. We'll be talking to Laura Ward from Sarsfields. We'll also be doing football with Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly. And for a change as well, we are going to have the first episode of a 7-part series entitled Tiger Roll, The People's Horse, that will be playing out here towards the end of the show, and it is well worth tuning in for.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. Being flat to the mat isn't real. Our protein is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We're going to turn our attention to the Premier League and Alan Cawley, Manchester City hockeyed Manchester United, to put it mildly.
The only thing that's surprising about this, Ruby, since the game, is that people are actually surprised that Man City destroyed them. I could have told you this on Friday night. I could have told you this on Wednesday night. I could have told you this on Monday night.
You probably did tell us, to be fair.
And I did tell you this.
I was going to say that. You did tell us, yeah.
And even, to be fair, over the last 2, 3, 4 years, like, we've had this discussion, we've had this debate. They're so far ahead. Man City are so far ahead of Man United, it's not even funny. And for them people, I suppose, to tune into the game yesterday, and the first half was quite competitive, obviously losing the first goal. Man City, they responded quite well, United, and got the goal back with Sancho. And it was quite competitive the second half then. It was like literally men against boys. And this isn't surprising to me in the slightest. It absolutely is not. And we've said it on numerous occasions, there's players playing for Man United that are nowhere near the level. They've no manager. Man City have a better manager. They've better players. They've a better attitude. They've a better mindset. They're more hungrier. They've more desire. So, like, how did anybody think that Man United were going to get a result yesterday? It's beyond me.
I think just looking at Alex Ferguson in the crowd yesterday, I couldn't help but think, like, what is he thinking? Like, what's going through his mind?
I tell you what's going through his mind. How did any of those make Harry Maguire captain?
And that's the problem. Like, there's a whole load. Like, you go through the goals even. Tellez, average player, concedes. The cross comes in. Wan-Bissaka, they paid 50 million for him. He's so ordinary, so average, so easy to cross coming in. Then Tellez is caught flat-footed. De Bruyne scores. You go through the goals. The second one, Lindelof is caught in the edge of the box. Foden flicks it over his head. No one reacts in the box. It's like week after week, these mistakes are remade. They don't learn. The biggest thing for me, whatever about them being ordinary players and average players, and they are, McTominay and Fred. If you're relying on McTominay and Fred to get you back to the Champions League level or to be winning Premier League titles, and this isn't new. This is stuff I've been saying a year ago and 2 years ago. Like, this isn't new, this stuff. So it's not surprising in the slightest, the result yesterday. Man City are so far ahead. Liverpool are so far ahead. And I made a comment, I'm going back a few months ago, just about, you think of Liverpool waiting 30 years to win a league title. Man United, it will take them 20, 25 years to win a title, I think.
Stephen Kelly is with us on the line. Stephen, do you agree with Alan? Will it take them 20, 25 years to win a title, do you think?
Would be. You just look at how far City and Liverpool, and you haven't even thrown Chelsea into that as well. Chelsea are so far ahead of them, and Chelsea have not been great as well for parts of this season, but Chelsea are so far ahead of them in the consistency. Like, Chelsea could go on and win the Champions League just because that's how good they've been and the squad they have. Like, Man U's players are so far off, and there's so many different things that's lacking in them. But the lack of quality midfielders, it's, and Alan said it, it's been glaringly obvious for, I think, anybody that watches football. Like, you don't have to be an expert to realise that the middle of the park is where someone that's been so life for United for so long, and they have not resolved it. And they tried to resolve the defensive situations. That hasn't worked because Maguire has been a disaster and the price tag around him seems crazy. But if you have a decent midfielder in there, that helps the defensive situation, and they haven't resolved that at all, and they're so light, it's unbelievable. But yeah, they're miles off it, absolutely miles off it.
I nearly lost for words here, lads. I'd prefer to talk about Man City because all we seem to do is give out about Manchester United, but City are... They were brilliant.
Yeah, and they are brilliant. And that's the point, Ruby. They are brilliant. And it's no shame, I suppose, to lose to Man City because they're that good. But when you think of Man United and the standards that they've set over the years, to be beaten in the manner which they are, that's the most frustrating thing. And the one thing I think, and I don't want to harp back to Man United now that you've gone to Man City, but the most worrying thing about all that is all the noise that's coming out of Man United at the moment in the camp, like, you think when Ferguson was in charge, and Marie referenced Ferguson, and everything was kept in house, the players more or less managed the dressing room, you had Keane the leader and whatever, and Beckham, Scholes, whoever it was, Neville, good senior professionals. There's so much noise coming out of Old Trafford and Man United now. You look at the players and their attitude, how poor the attitude is. Like, people were suggesting yesterday they gave up. You could easily label that at them. It's the worst criticism you could ever label at a footballer, and they actually looked like the last 20-25 minutes they gave up. And that's the most worrying thing. As I said, you can have lads having an off day. Absolutely, they're not good enough in terms of the quality that you need to play for Man United, but their attitude is atrocious, Ruby. You've Rashford coming out today saying he wants to leave because he's disappointed with his game time. His game time, have you seen him, his performances during his game time that he's been playing in the last 6 months? It's horrendous.
When you see that statistic as well, the 92% possession for the last 15 minutes of game, I think you talk about giving up, like, that's the most damning thing you're ever going to see. Like, 92% possession for a game, like, that's, like, you wouldn't do that. As adults, you probably wouldn't do that against an under sevens or eights kids team. Like, you'd struggle to get that. It's unbelievable to have that much time on the ball.
As difficult as it was for Man United fans to watch yesterday, I think if they'd stay tuned and watch, Roy Keane would give you a little bit of faith in maybe the club and what it's about because of his association with it. But Ruby, hearing him just talking with such passion and such disappointment about the way the players were reacting both on and off the pitch, would you think that bringing somebody like him in would help in any way?
I don't know, does his managerial record stack up to bringing him into Manchester United, but his desire, his passion, his honesty, Marie, is what I loved. He was so honest, and even Stephen, you played and so did you, Alan, even his honesty about what will happen in the next couple of days, lads will come out and apologise and go through their Twitter and say how disappointed they are, and they will try better the next day. You could almost feel him saying, would you shut up and just do it rather than talk about
do
it.
Do it on the pitch.
Yeah.
The character that he was at the mindset in that brilliant dressing room, but ultimately it came down to, regardless of the talent that was in the dressing room, how hard they worked, Ruby, and that's your starting point. You look at those players, and he mentioned it yesterday, and to be fair to him, a lot of people suggest Keane can be ranting at times. I love Roy Keane, but he's right, and everything he said, he's spot on. But this isn't new as well. He's been saying this 6 months ago and a year ago and a year and a half. We've all been saying it. Like, so for anybody to think, oh, all of a sudden, as if Man United got destroyed by Man City and what's going on at the club, this has been coming for months, and it's happened before numerous times. They're in a mess. They're in a sorry state at the moment. Where to go from here, I don't know, because the culture of the club is wrong from top to bottom. But if we're just focusing on the football side of it, that dressing room, to me, is toxic.
Stephen, will any of those Manchester United players have watched what Roy Keane said last night and sit down and today and think, you know what, he's right? Or will they sit down and say, who's that old geriatric?
Or tweet about it.
I've definitely seen it. It's been so far widespread, and they're all on their phones. They would have been checking their phones when they came out, which again is another culture, which again, myself, Alan, when we played, you used to thinking, like, you would have got fined if your phone was anywhere near you in the change room, never mind tweeting about anything. But they definitely would have seen it. Whether or not they're man up enough to actually take it on board and say, yeah, that is right, that's right, like, you know. But if you're getting it from someone like Roy Keane, and I think he can at times, you listen to him and you think that he's just ranting on. But a lot of the points he made yesterday were actually quite valid. When you see for the goal, Mahrez's goal, it's a wonderful goal, technique from De Bruyne passed it. But he's right about it. The ball has travelled so far and no one's turned to just sprint it out to him. No one's thrown their body in the way. No one's reacted to the cross. And it's just simple things that they're not doing. They're not actually running for each other. They're not working hard enough. There's no desire there. And that's what he was the epitome of, wasn't it? It was desire. So you can't fault what he's saying. I don't know what it'll take on board. They'll probably have another decent performance and then fall off again, but it's going to be down to what they believe themselves and what they want. But so far, you look at the criticism they're getting, and the first thing they do is try and distance themselves from it, and now they're trying to, like Rashford, he's looking for a move, Pogba be looking for a move again somewhere, you know what I mean? This is what happens with them. They don't really take it on board and go out and do it on the pitch. They just move on and then try and distance himself from it, which is the wrong way to go about it.
See, the culture that's been created as well, Marie, when you think of Klopp, the best managers, and Guardiola, and you go back to Ferguson and all these brilliant managers, there's a fear factor. And if you're not doing it, the manager puts so many demands on you. No matter who you are, if you're not doing it at Man City, you won't get a game. They paid 100 million for Jack Grealish. He hasn't kicked the ball for 6 weeks because he was acting up and messing with Foden, and they had a late night and whatever, and he didn't come into training in the right frame of mind. So there's all these different things. Klopp's the same. It doesn't matter who you are. Ferguson managed the same way. There's no coincidence that that's why these are the top managers. You look at that dressing room, man. How can you, when you think of one of the comments that's been made, and there's been loads, there's that many problems, you don't know where to start. But when you think of one of the comments I heard, I think Gary Neville saying yesterday, that when Rangnick came in, he wanted to play this 4-2-2-2 system that he obviously believes in, but the players didn't like it, so he has to change. Like, in all, like, that would never happen with any top manager. And that's no disrespect to Rangnick. He's only in the door. I wouldn't blame him.
Does he not just say, sorry, you don't want to play it? Fine, you sit on the bench. Will you play that way? Yeah, you're playing. That's how you exert control. You just say, no, you don't want to do it? No, sit down.
But he's in a position where he's only there till the summer. He has a role lined up for 2 years upstairs, so he's not going to rock the boat. So the whole place is a mess, Ruby.
But you can obviously tell as well they're not listening to him, because
they're not at all.
Yeah, that there is no fear factor, as you said as well. And just one final thing on Roy Keane as well, Alan. I didn't feel like he was ranting yesterday. I think he's almost past that, and he's just really, really disappointed. Like,
yeah, and what kind of makes it sound as if he's ranting is then you have Michael Richards laughing along and making kind of almost like a comedy sketch out of it. Adds nothing to it whatsoever, because Keane cares. He absolutely cares. He captained the club for so long. He was so successful. And when he sees the dire straits that the club is in now, and not alone that, the standards that he set himself to get to that level, and you think of how far they've dropped, of course it would irritate you.
Okay, we have been talking about Manchester United and Manchester City for quite a long time. And before we do move on, if we even have time to move on, just one quick one on Jack Grealish there. Alan brought him up. I know, Stephen, that you know him very well, that you have trained with him in the past. Just in terms of how he is progressing or not progressing in Manchester City, what do you think the problem is?
It's because there's so many players that can not do exactly what he does, because he is slightly different to the lads up there, but they have so many attacking quality players in that final third that bring it, that dynamic, and they pass the ball well and they move, so that it's different for him. Like at Villa, he was basically given the ball at the edge of his own box and was told to get them up the pitch. Everything they did was going through him, whereas with City, it's different. That's not going to happen. You have arguably the best passing the ball in the world in Kevin De Bruyne. You have Phil Foden, who's a genius. You've got Silva, who's back on complete form. Mahrez is flying. You've Sterling. You've got all these players around you that bring a very similar energy and directness in that final third. Jack is different because he can carry the ball a bit better. He draws people in. He draws fouls. And I think statistically, and you see Pep talking about it, that statistically, because he's not getting shots, he's not getting goals, he's not getting all those things, it's jumping out on him. And he does have to improve. I think the side of his game that, you know, off the pitch, you can't do that with Pep. You just can't. He wants you to be an absolute athlete committed to the cause, and Jack has got that side of him, the Jack the Lad, that, you know, people probably admire a little bit, and he gets, I suppose, people enjoy that side of him, but because he's a bit of a rogue, a bit of a Gazza type-esque about him. But you don't want that. See, you don't want that. See, you want players that are going to deliver nines and tens every week for them, and I think that's where he's fallen off. But is he capable? Absolutely. Like he honestly, he's sensational. He really is an absolute star, but he needs to just knuckle down and make sure that he's performing week in, week out, and getting those assists. And against United, at times he draws three or four people towards him and like created that space for Silva for the first goal, and did things to cause them problems. And I think he will be a success there.
Okay, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us, Alan, as well. And just before we head for a break, just a quick mention, Brian Kerr is involved in a history tour of Daly Mount Park. There's going to be Q&A with Brian, and it is hosted by Gary Cook of Apres Match and Aidan O'Riordan, the TD, and it's a fundraiser for the Ukraine, a very important one, and it is on tonight at 7:30. If anyone is at a loose end later on, it's like something Alan Cawley might drop into on the way home.
He's not dressed for it.
Ruby slagging my tracks.
A history tour of Daly Mount for anyone that's interested. Brian Kerr, Q&A, and Gary Cook of Apres Match is hosting that, and all proceeds are going to the Ukraine.
RTE
2FM.
Game on.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Rise and grind and the hustle mindset aren't real. The protein in our chicken and turkey is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
On 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It is time to turn our attention to Camogie. There was a brilliant day of action in Croke Park yesterday, with Sarsfields coming out on top in the senior decider against Owler at the Bala. And I'm delighted to say that Laura Ward joins us now, fresh from celebrations, no doubt. Laura, how are you?
I'm good, Marie. How are you?
I'm great. Look, it was a brilliant one to be involved in, I'd say, and an even better one to win. What was it like playing out there?
Oh, Marie, it was absolutely amazing. I suppose, like, any day you get to go out to Croke Park and play in it is absolutely amazing, but to win and to win with your club, it's so extra special.
Laurie, you sound incredibly fresh for somebody who won a club championship yesterday, but it must have been amazing to be able to turn a defeat around so quickly. It's only before Christmas that you lost all out to Ballon in the 2021 championship, and already you've turned it around and you're the champions.
Yeah, exactly, Ruby. And look, it's like we went out there, I suppose, trying to redeem ourselves from that match before Christmas. And like, I suppose we were absolutely underdogs going into that game, and we had a lot to prove. And we tried to learn a lot from the game before Christmas and just try to leave everything out on the pitch yesterday.
We were talking, I interviewed you last week, Laura, and you know, you were very determined that you were going to learn the lessons. And we were talking before the match then in the build up, and we were saying, yeah, like, it's great thinking about it and in theory, but in practice being able to do it was going to be completely different. But you were able to do it. Like, you nullified that Una Lacey threat in the middle, you cut off the forwards the supply in the middle as well. The ball that had been going into that forward line in the first final was just really difficult to deal with. And then just you in the backs as a unit, you just worked so hard, and it felt like it all came together. But I'd assume it was from a lot of hard work in those few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of hard work was put in behind the scenes as well from Kevin and Hopper and John and Olive. And I suppose we had a lot to prove, as I said before. And look, at like, we went out there, all we wanted was a performance, and everything clicked for us from like the six backs, the six forwards, the midfielders, the girls that came on, the girls on the sideline. Everything just worked for us from the management on the sideline. Like, you need a little bit of luck with you as well, but on the day, everything just clicked for us. And I suppose it clicked for Owlett Dalla just before Christmas, and we were just lucky enough that it clicked for us yesterday.
Listening to Michael McGrath after the match, it didn't sound like he left too many people at home. Small parish, two national schools to pick from. You know, I mean, you say he clicked. Was there anybody left at home not to click with?
Yeah, no, there was nobody left at home. But no, it was absolutely amazing to see all the club up there to support us yesterday. And as I said before, like, going out there with your club was amazing, but seeing how happy they were when we came back to Gallers of Ballyfah last night, it just makes all that hard work, training over Christmas, training in the winter, like training the top pitch and you in, train, like, it just makes everything so worth it when you see all them faces when you come in after the match.
Tell us a little bit about the team. Ruby made a really good attempt at naming all the McGrath sisters on air earlier. You got four
Niamh,
anyway.
Orla, Clodagh and Siobhan.
What's the younger girl's name?
There's Niamh, Clodagh, Orla Siobhan, and then Kieran and Leisha.
There's two more. There's six
there's
of them.
There's two more, but they're not up yet this year.
That's amazing. Wow. Like, I can't even imagine what it must have been like for Michael McGrath to be involved and have four daughters playing on a team.
Yeah, look, like, it's amazing for that family, like, to see they put so much work in to start with Camogie. Hopper himself, he's been with us, I think he's actually trained me, I'd say, since I was under 12, all the way up along. he's an absolute amazing man. Like, he puts so much into it, and going out there to win is amazing for him as well, especially because it means so much to him. You can see it in his face, even in interviews and stuff afterwards. Like, it just means the absolute world to him, and it's amazing.
I was looking at his interview again, the same interview where he said you were so focused. I kind of got the feeling looking at him, it was focused, so you had no chance of even getting on the bus.
Yeah, absolutely. If we weren't focused getting on that bus, I feel like we would have been left at home, and you and we probably would have been the only ones left at home, all the rest would have gone up.
And Laura, look, your battle with Una Lacey, I mean, anyone that follows Camogie knows about the Lacys and the impact that they have, and we saw what she was able to do so many times in this championship and last year's championship as well. What was it like even preparing to go toe-to-toe with her a second time round?
Well, I suppose, personally, myself, I learned a lot from that first game before the Christmas. I think I remember saying to you, Marie, during the week how she was so physically strong and stuff. I didn't expect that before the Christmas, and I suppose I learned a lot from that game, and I tried to bring it into the game yesterday and just try to stay focused. And I suppose it just, like, as I said, the ball kind of bounced right for me as well, and I had a little bit of luck on my side. But it just kind of worked for me on the day.
You're an absolutely phenomenal club, though. Is it five All-Ireland finals since 2016?
Five county titles since 2016, I think, yeah.
That's unbelievable. And you were only, I think Anne-Marie was saying that she played in All-Ireland club final, and you were playing the intermediate before her a few years before that as well.
Yeah. Look, it's unbelievable what's Klopp, and I've already mentioned Hopper. Like, look, he's put all that work in with us, and all the people that put work in underage. Like, it's just, it's unbelievable. Like, it's all about the underage, really, in a club, and to keep girls there. And I suppose we put a lot of work in, and we're just lucky enough that we got the 5 county titles as well.
5 county titles is great. I love the way you say that you got the hop of the ball. Winning people are always always say that. You don't think by any chance you earned it. Watching Siobhan McGrath and even Niamh McGrath, you just don't think you were the better team, no? That's what it looked to me now.
They're modest.
Well, I suppose, yeah, on the day, we probably were a little bit the better team. We heard a lot during the last few weeks about how we didn't work hard enough before the Christmas, and I suppose that kind of hurt us as well a bit. So going out there yesterday, our main thing was just to kind of try and work harder than them and match their work rate that they did all before Christmas. And look, at like the start Mo McGrath had was outstanding. I knew the minute she touched the first ball, Ant Nels, she was going to touch, was going to work out for her. She's an absolutely unbelievable player. But from like Avon on the pitch, like a lot just works for us. Avon, just you wanted the ball and you wanted the whole possession, and like we just want that performance.
Well, you definitely got it anyway, Laura Ward. Thank you so much and congratulations to you and all of the Sarsfields team as well. It is nearly time for us to take a break, but before we do that, we have our competition winner. Of course, the answer is Katie Taylor, and the winner is Sharon O'Reilly from Boher Lahan Douala ladies football team in Tipperary. So Sharon wins the €100 sports voucher, and her club are in Friday's draw for the €1,000 sports voucher. We're going to take a very quick break, but don't go away. We have our Tiger Roll documentary coming up.
2FM.
Game on.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty.